Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, June 18th, 2021. It's the 169th day of the year. We are grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that's the first step on a journey that can introduce you to some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. That chapter of that book, his book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years now to improve my quality of life and relationships and to effectively turn any negative emotional state I experience into part of that infallible guidance system that each of us have been gifted. We hope you do that soon and often. We hope you click on the link that lets you download the actual tool absolutely free. It's a PDF file. You can print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the use of that tool live on the show, or they've given testimonials about the positive benefits in their life of using that tool consistently and persistently over time. You can also go to your app store, either Google Play or the Apple App Store, and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing that, the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you click on it, it lets you download a completely free and private app that'll give you access to the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often because it'll raise questions or maybe provide you with answers. And if you have comments, questions, or answers or testimonials to share with us after doing that, you can give us a call. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll let me know you've got a comment or a question, and I'll announce you by your area code. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and this is, as I mentioned, day 169. And lesson 169 is titled, By Grace I Live, By Grace I Am Released. Again, this is a very long series of commentaries about this lesson, and I will not read all of them, but the commentary begins with the statement that grace is an aspect of the love of creation which is most like that state prevailing in the unity of truth. It is the world's most lofty aspiration, for it leads beyond the world entirely. It is past learning, yet the goal of learning for grace cannot come until the mind prepares itself for acceptance. Grace becomes inevitable instantly in those who have prepared a table where it can be gently laid and willingly received, an altar clean and holy for the gift. And this reminds me of the idea of the ancient Aramaic definition of prayer. That is, setting a trap for God. Getting yourself ready to receive the frequency of creation. I was giving a talk once in the series of talks I did for Unity Churches and Religious Science Churches and Unitarian Churches. And I remember in the preparation for the talk, I had this image come to my mind about one of those large live trap cages for raccoons. And the door swings in and up and latches, and then you put food at the back of the cage that the raccoon would be interested in. And when the raccoon comes in the door to go get the food, it trips a lever and the door closes behind it. And that's the trap. Set the trap for the raccoon. But in order for that to work, you have to leave that trap completely free and open. All right? If you take that trap and you put the food in the back end, and you prop the door up, and then you stuff the trap full of crumpled newspapers, you're never going to catch any raccoons. There has to be this clean and open space for the raccoon to come in. Well, if our minds are so busy, this leads to a story from Guy Finley. He said there was this, you know, World War fighter plane that went down, and they landed, crash landed safely on this island, but everything was ruined except the receiver on the radio. And they had to be very careful and hide in the caves, and late at night the captain sent this private up to just scan the radio dial until he received the instructions for where to go for this, his crew to be saved, because he knew that they would come for him. He knew that, you know, the saving message would come. All they had to do was receive it. But down in the lowlands, they couldn't get the radio signal, so, and you couldn't go up the top of the hill during the day because the enemy would see you. And so he sent this private to the top of this mountain in the middle of the night. And he said, just stay up here for 3 or 4 hours and come back before light and just sit here on this one frequency, this is our frequency, and wait until you get the instructions about where and when we need to go to get rescued. So the first night, the private came back and the captain said, and the private said, nope, I didn't hear anything. So he sent him up for another night. He came back and said, nope, I didn't hear anything. Third night, nope, I didn't hear anything. Captain says, something is wrong. I know our people are going to be sending the signal and they want us to get rescued. So this time, when the private goes up, the captain waited a little while and then went up and hid and listened to what the private was doing. And here is this private just surfing the radio dial back and forth, and he's hearing all these different languages and he never stays very long on any one channel. And finally, the captain comes out of hiding and says to him, what are you doing, man? Captain says, I've read your personnel file. I know you don't speak any of these other languages. Why aren't you listening for the message? And the private said, well, Captain, you know, it was boring, and I didn't want to be up here all by myself. So because he kept spinning around the dial, filling his mind with all of these hollow words that he didn't even understand the language, and he wasn't able to receive the real signal, the real message. This is setting a trap for God. Clear our minds of the garbage. Use the tools to clear away the emotions that come from these negative beliefs. Use our negative emotions properly as a warning signal and open ourselves to receive that voice, that guidance that all of us have. Open our minds to see and feel the truth of our oneness with all of creation. And so that's what we're being called to in this. And the benefits of awareness that we're one with all creation and how it will lead us, guide us, and gift us things goes beyond words. So our learning goal today does not exceed this prayer. Yet, if we can do that one thing, there can't be any more that we would ask. So the lesson for today is, by grace I live, by grace I am released. By grace I give, by grace I will release. And the Pam Grout lesson 169 is titled, Do Your Beliefs Block the Flow of the World's Limitless Abundance? She quotes Nikola Tesla as saying, if you wish to understand the universe, think of energy, frequency, and vibration. Pam writes, I am more or less illiterate when it comes to anything electrical. I know what a plug looks like, and I know how to attach it to a wall socket. Beyond that, I draw a blank. There's a device used in electronics that provides a good metaphor for understanding Lesson 169. Lesson 169 reads, by grace I live, by grace I am released. This device is called a resistor. And basically, please, all of you electricians out there, forgive my simplistic explanation. Basically what it does is reduce the amount of electrical current flowing through a circuit. Resistors limit the number of electrons that can flow past a given point at any one time. Well, my beliefs about myself and about the way the world works serve as resistors, blocking the flow of the world's limitless abundance. My beliefs are the brakes that stop the natural, always flowing current of good, the grace that this lesson promises. Let me give you an example. Most people believe money is limited and hard to come by. That is a resistor. On the other hand, they don't believe health or intelligence is limited. Just because I'm healthy doesn't mean you can't be healthy too. Stephen Hawking's brilliant intellect doesn't prevent Matt Gronick or Steven Spielberg from using their brain power. However, when it comes to abundance, the belief that there's only so much to go around is a big, fat resistor. It's better at blocking the flow than tungsten, carbon, and other popular resistors. In the world of electronics, resistors sometimes come in handy. They create heat and light. But for me, who longs for a life of ease and grace, I prefer to keep the flow as wide open as I possibly can. So by grace I live, by grace I am released, by grace I give, and by grace I will release. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. There is more to talk about than we have time for. I have been looking at a couple different things to read or point out to people today. I believe I mentioned yesterday that I was talking about the process of addiction that is discussed so well and deeply from so many different perspectives in Gabor Mate's book, In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, and the 12th chapter of that book raises the question, do drugs cause addiction? And he talks about how in this swirling cloud of misleading ideas surrounding the public discussion of addiction, there's one that stands out. That's the misconception that taking a drug by itself will lead to addiction. And while it's been disproven many, many times in many different ways, that's still a misconception that's very common. It is one of the bedrock fables that sustains the so-called war on drugs. And it obscures the existence of a basic addiction process of which the drug itself is only one possible object among many that we should be examining. For instance, compulsive gambling is widely considered to be a form of addiction, but no one is arguing that it's caused by a deck of cards or a pair of dice. So, this process and the evidence that it's far more complex than just the impact of a drug on the physiology of the human gets expanded when you look at the Vietnam vets. Heroin is considered to be a highly addictive drug, and it is, but only for a small minority of people. As the following example illustrates, it's well known that many American soldiers serving in Vietnam in the late 1960s and early 1970s were regular users of heroin. Along with heroin, most of these soldier addicts used barbiturates or amphetamines or both. According to a study published in the Archives of Psychiatry in 1975, 20% of the returning enlisted men met the criteria for the diagnosis of addiction when they were in Southeast Asia. Whereas before they were shipped overseas, fewer than 1% of them had been opiate addicts. So they got hooked while they were on tours of duty in Vietnam where the drug was available like water. The researchers were astonished to find that after Vietnam, use of particular drugs and combinations of drugs decreased to near or even below pre-service levels. Now, if the drug is the thing that's causing the addiction, this cannot happen. This could not happen. Goes on to say the remission rate was 95%. This is unheard of among narcotics addicts treated in the United States. The high rates of narcotic use and addiction there were unlike anything prior to the American experience that these researchers had studied. Equally dramatic was the surprising high remission rate after return to the United States. These results suggested that the addiction did not arise from heroin itself, but from the needs of the men who used the drug. Otherwise, most of them would have remained addicts. So I just want to highlight the fact that the definition for addiction that Dr. Michael Rice uses that is so powerful because it is what we call an operational definition. It simply defines this process by the way it operates. So we don't have to get into any philosophical debates. And the definition is that addiction is the compulsive use of any food or substance or person or activity to block or numb myself out from pain, conscious or unconscious pain, and or to keep myself from seeing and following my highest guidance. And that goes right in line with what these studies about addiction show, that people who are in pain are far more likely to become addicted and stay addicted. And it's in the running from the pain and the lack of resources for directly coping with and removing the pain that leads them into their compulsive use of their, quote, drug of choice, even if it's not a drug, even if it's gambling, even if it's hoarding, even if it's thrift shopping, even if it's masturbation, even if it's eating really unhealthy foods at high rates. It's running from pain and only running from our internal pain that leaves most of us willing to do that compulsive behavior for the thing that is, it carries with it a self-destructive process. And I know there are people who would argue, yes, but, you know, we know how powerful the addictive process is, because if you give rats the choice of food and water or cocaine and heroin, they will use cocaine and heroin until they die of starvation. And the experiments they've run, you can look up the, you know, the experiment called Rat Park, the series of articles written about that. The experiments they've run indicate it's just not the case, because rats are social animals. They like living in communities. And if you put rats in a large enough cage with a fairly natural environment for them, places to crawl and climb and swim and interact with other rats, and you give them the option for cocaine and or heroin or food, and they can freely access any of those three, they don't choose the cocaine and heroin. They choose the food. They choose the normal, active life with other members of their species. The real acid test was they even took rats that they had physically addicted, in their words, scientifically, physically addicted to the heroin and or the cocaine, and then put them in the rat park, and they quit using, even though it was free. It was freely available. It's right there next to the food and water, and they quit. And they choose life when they're not running from pain, when they're not socially isolated. So, I also, another thing I wanted to share was, an article / email that Susan Bingham sent to me. For this is from the Richard Rohr email list, Richard Rohr's Daily Meditation. It's titled, Unnecessary Negativity. And Richard writes, true spirituality, that which invites us to ever deeper levels of transformation and love, does not insist on us staying positive all the time. But it does insist on us staying true to the journey. So, drawing on the wisdom of both Sufi mystical tradition in which she was raised, as well as the teachings of Carl Jung and others, the author and dream work specialist Toko Pa Turner writes about how facing our shadows will benefit us both individually and collectively, even as it makes us uncomfortable. So Toko Pa writes, what if negative emotions have something essential to communicate to us and each other? What if the real problem is the misguided attitude that says negative emotions make us feel less evolved and that negative emotions are bad or need fixing? In the same way that we hold others at arm's length when they are too different from us, we avoid the inner encounter with otherness, including anything that doesn't fit the image that we've been building about ourselves. Negative emotions do not cease to exist because we ignore them. They just find other ways to express themselves. Sometimes we lash out inappropriately. Sometimes we have confusing crying fits. Or we feel protractedly numb. Most commonly, we just slip into depression or anxiety. If these are not addressed in a person's life, these issues can harden into ideologies, which are then passed down through the generations. When you add to this equation a loud or charismatic leader, then movements like Nazism will be born from the corroborative fear of otherness. Nazism was fomented on the notion of a pure race, capitalizing on people's unintegrated shadows, convincing a nation to murder millions of people who were the unfortunate bearers of this shadow projection. We think of Nazis as evil, but the truth is we all have the potential for this kind of evil, which is ultimately the act of turning away from the suffering of others and ourselves. Most of us have been raised to be moral, good, and agreeable, trying to put all of our unacceptable qualities into what Robert Bly calls the long black bag. We then drag that bag behind us, or what Jung called the personal shadow. Jung wrote, "The shadow is the place where everything we have forgotten, denied, rejected, or not yet discovered goes to live." But when we try to live up to the impossible image of a spiritually enlightened, knowledgeable, selfless, patient, forgiving, easygoing, supportive, generous, superhuman, the dark side of our nature just gains in power. You always have the choice to turn away or to look for redemption in the shadows. Sometimes turning away is exactly what you need in the moment, especially if you're tired from toiling in there. Trust that whatever you decide is the right decision. And also know that if the issue being presented has roots, it will still be there when you're ready to look at it. We cannot simply remove the shadow all at once. It takes wisdom, courage, and forbearance for our shadows to reveal themselves to us so they can be faced and dealt with gently, compassionately, and firmly. I would add to that list of what's needed is good tools. And that's what we offer at whyagain.org. Thanks to the tireless efforts of Michael and Jeannie Rice, you can go to whyagain.org and click on the Start Here link and get access to a tool that can help you discover and dismantle your shadow. You can only discover and dismantle your shadow if you are willing to see it as such. Area code 605. You're in the air. Who do we have?
Yeah, my name's Joe.
Can you say that again? My volume was turned down.
Okay, my name is Joe.
Joe, how can I support you?
Okay. I have a question for you. I came across one of these dime a dozen relationship counselors the other day. But instead of calling herself a relationship counselor, she says that her specialty is narcissistic personality disorder. So she calls herself a narcissistic personality disorder expert. So I asked her if she was certified or licensed in any way, and she says no, but she knows more about that particular disorder than psychologists, psychiatrists, and psychotherapists. And then she goes on to say, in fact, there's a manual that I guess a psychiatrist or people in your profession use in order to diagnose certain certain conditions. And she says that she diagnoses people as narcissistic personality disorder, but you people in your profession are prohibited from doing that and don't even recognize that there are people who have narcissistic personality disorder. So what's your answer to that?
I'm not sure there's a question there, and I'm not sure of the relevance. Do you understand what we do on this podcast? We're talking about the ancient Aramaic tools of forgiveness that Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice make available, and we're supporting
people learning about them
and using them. And Dr. Michael Rice is a doctorate of naturopathic medicine, and he's a doctorate of metaphysics. So the kind of question that you're asking is probably good for a different show.
Okay, let me.
If you have a question
about
forgiveness or the tools that we make available.
Do you want to answer the question? I don't know what your show's about. I saw the headline. I saw the description page.
Okay, so we're here to talk about the tools that are available that Dr. Michael Rice has identified as the ancient Aramaic tools of forgiveness, and he makes them available free at whyagain.org. And we frequently, when questions like this come up of a philosophical nature or about the global issues, we ask people, if I had an answer to that question, if I was God, him or her, or itself, and could answer that question for you, how would it make a difference in your life today, tomorrow, the next day? Because I don't have the answer to these global questions, I might be able to help you if you were to identify what is it you're trying to accomplish in your life, specifically if it's related to these tools that Michael Rice has developed and make available at whyagain.org. So Joe has left the queue, and I assume that he'll find his answer somewhere else. And I'll throw it open for us, 563-999-3581. What's your comment or your question, either about the Course in Miracles lesson for today or our reading from Toko Pa Turner on negative emotions and how we could use our negative emotions as a part of our internal guidance system, the infallible internal guidance system? 563-999-3581 and press 1. We have the list of tools available. They begin with the reality management worksheet, and they continue on with the three early memories of conflict. They continue on with the codependent to interdependence worksheet, and they extend down from there. There's a mind goal management sheet. I had somebody yesterday who was asking me about the core tool, which is the reality management worksheet, and about the process of setting a loving goal. And one of the things that is most often a missed point or misinterpreted point is that when we have a worksheet and we decide to choose a goal that if it were to be met, all of our upsets would be dissipated. Some people mistake us as saying whatever goal we're holding is the problem. And the goal I'm holding is never the problem. So I can't have a solution by changing the goal. And there was a person I was speaking to just yesterday who was convinced that that was the case, that what I need to do is identify the goal, and if I'm upset, it means that my goal isn't loving, and if I just find a way to focus on a loving goal, that will dissipate my upset, and that will solve my problem. It reminds me of a daily quote that I came across. It's put out by Diedrich Wolsack on his daily quote, but it's a quote from Alan Watts, and it says, problems that remain persistently insoluble should always be suspected as being questions asked in the wrong way. Problems that remain persistently insoluble should always be suspected to be questions that are being asked in the wrong way. So here's Diedrich Wolfsack writing a little bit about that. And to my eye and ear, it sounds almost exactly like Dr. Michael Rice and his teaching. If I ask my ego to resolve the problems it created, I'm in dire need of help. And yet, that is what I do over and over again. This is what Michael Rice has in his seven-step worksheet process that David Bohm called sustained incoherence. Diedrich goes on and says, the ego makes up the problems that I perceive, and then the ego directs my perception, and then the ego blames me for not finding a solution. There is a teacher within each of us who does know the answer to any perceived problem. And there is a decision maker who has to choose. The decision maker has to choose, who am I going to listen to, the ego or the capital S self, the inner guide? The capital S self, when asked, will with a gentle smile show me clearly that there are no problems, only healing opportunities. The self, the little s self, the ego, frantically redefines the problem, and in doing so makes the solution ever more obscure. So, to be clear about the reality management worksheet, based on the premise that our true nature is love, it's based on the idea that we are living in, swimming in, flowing in, existing in grace, in the creative energy of the Creator, some call it love. And as the Course in Miracles lessons from yesterday and today point out, the Creator's grace is given to me and I can claim it now, and by grace I live, and by grace I am released. That's the basis of the reality management worksheet. And if that's the case and I'm tuned into it, I'm going to be experiencing bliss. I'm going to be experiencing joy. I'm going to be experiencing allowance, acceptance, and surrender. But when I experience something other than that, this worksheet reminds me I'm creating my experience, just like page 5 in The Way of Mastery says. I don't experience anything that's not of my own choosing. So the worksheet then says, let's just focus on who you are and your true nature is love, and let's recognize as close as we can to 100% responsibility that we are creating any upset we experience internally, and then put my name on the page, accept that I'm upset and give it an emotion word. And sadness might be one, anger could be one. Hurt, frustration, confusion, overwhelm could be one. And then map out what my mind is telling me about who or what I think is causing it. And what was the interaction I was involved in recently that my mind wants me to believe is causing my upset? And then I get very specific about how I want to punish the world or that person or myself for causing my upset. And then get very clear about what is the thought I'm using to actually generate the negative emotion? And then formulate a goal and recognize that in order for me to be upset, I must be focusing on a goal that's not getting met. And when I do that, I focus on the goal. I get the right one that's lined up with the emotion and my thoughts about myself and my thoughts about interacting with my trigger, whether it's myself or the world or some other person. And I formulate a goal that if this magical goal would happen, this positively stated, lovely alternative to the actuality of life, if my goal could happen, it would wipe out the need for this worksheet. It would immediately mean I do not have the thought that's generating the negative emotion, and this whole dynamic that I was observing in the world between me and the world or me and another person, it would be changed if my idealistic goal were met. And then later on in the worksheet, it has me cancel that goal. The critical point for today's talk is that I am not canceling the goal because the goal is bad or wrong. It might be the most loving goal ever imagined by any human mind anywhere. I only cancel the goal because that goal, whether it's getting met or not met, is energetically connected, resonating in my mind with the negative emotion I'm experiencing, whether it's pain or fear or sadness or hurt, and it's resonating with, most likely, false negative beliefs about myself. So I can't find a solution to my pain, my fear, my sadness, my hurt, my confusion by canceling a goal and then just substituting a positive, loving goal. I can't expect that the pain and fear and sadness that I brought with me into this situation is going to fall away if I simply focus on positive, loving goals. This tool, even though in the last step it asks me to structure a loving goal, it's not the structuring of a loving goal that does the healing in this work. It's not the structuring of a loving goal that transforms my negative emotional states. And if I believe that, if I'm hooked into that, I'm on a wild goose chase. And I'll set my mind, it's pretty much analogous in my mind to trying to find the perfect positive affirmation. I do not experience sadness, hurt, pain, fear, anger, confusion because I've chosen a goal that isn't loving. I only, always and forever experience upsets because I'm carrying them around in me, and most often they've gotten resonated by the interpretation that I've placed on the data points that I generate from the world through my senses. And the dynamic that's resonating my pain and fear and sadness and hurt is how those energies have been energetically connected in my mind with this goal. And if I interpret a life situation as though my goal isn't getting met, and that goal is connected in my mind to pain or fear or sadness, I'm going to feel my pain and fear and sadness just because of energetic resonance. You know, I was trying to explain this to somebody the other day in my office, and I said, so I have this chair in my office. It's kind of a cranberry color. And if I had the goal that this chair be yellow, a bright yellow, and I say, chair, you're the wrong color. I want you to be yellow. Well, if the chair instantly transformed, there wouldn't be any upset in me. But if the chair stubbornly resists and stays the color of its fabric, and I have any pain or fear or sadness or negative emotion in my energy system related to people not following my orders, whether they're a chair or a person, I'm going to feel those negative energies because I keep focusing on this goal for the chair to be a bright yellow. Now, if I don't have negative emotional energy in me connected to that goal, my goal of people following my directions, when I say to the chair, chair, turn yellow, and it doesn't, I say to myself, I guess the chair isn't going to turn yellow. Maybe I should make a trip to the fabric store and buy some yellow fabric and change the chair. No upset, no need for a worksheet. unless there's an energetic connection in my mind-body energy system between the goal, no matter how neutral, no matter how negative, no matter how loving the goal is, the quality of the goal is irrelevant. What's relevant is what's energetically connected to that goal in my energy system. Here's another example that, as a therapist, I see in families, in couples, even if they're not married, that might, because it just popped into my head, and nobody has a hand up, I'm going to say it might have some relevance. Some people might look at this and say, that's a stupid or a silly example that you want your chair to change color. Well, here's another example that's a real-life example that often arises for couples when they're fortunate enough to have enough money to have a dishwasher in their home, an automated electric dishwasher in their home. And guess what it is? It's how the dishes are placed in the dishwasher. Now imagine this, if you will. There are human beings on this planet that will choose rage or choose to act from a rage that gets resonated in their mind when their loved one, husband, wife, child, puts a dish in the dishwasher in a way that goes against their goals for how the dishwasher should be stacked. Now, the question is that a bad goal to have the dishwasher stacked appropriately or the way the manual says or the way that I like it? No, it's not a bad goal. Is it a loving goal? No, it's kind of a neutral goal. And yet, if it's connected in my mind with pain, fear, sadness, or it resonates negative conclusions such as people don't respect me, nobody values my opinion, no one listens to me, then when I go and open the dishwasher and find that these dishes have been placed in a way that I don't like and doesn't meet my goal, and I reach the conclusion, this means these people don't respect me, they're not listening to me, they don't value me, it will resonate my upset. My mind is telling me I'm upset because the dishes are not in the right place in the dishwasher. Or my mind will tell me I'm upset because my husband, my wife, my child is not respecting me. Or it will tell me I'm upset because my husband, my wife, my child isn't listening to me or doesn't care about me. And the truth is, I'm only, always, and forever upset because of the dynamics inside me and the meaning I have given my interpretation of these outside events. So I cancel the goal for people to stack the dishwasher the right way, not because that's a bad goal, not because it's not loving enough. And no amount of setting loving goals is going to dismantle my upset, because currently in the situation I've just described, my upset is hidden from me and continues to be hidden from me as long as I focus on the dishes, the other person who did or didn't stack them in there the right way, etc. So now something is hidden in my mind that's actually generating my upset. How can I get access to what's hidden? The answer? I can cancel the goal, however loving it is, and ask to be shown the hidden part of my mind. That part of my mind is being obscured by this process that Diedrich Wolsack refers to and Alan Watts directs us to in this quote. Problems that remain persistently insoluble should always be suspected to be questions that are being asked in the wrong way. So I just want to highlight the idea that no amount of trying to choose a loving goal and then focusing on that is going to resolve my pain or fear or sadness. what's needed and what the reality management worksheet tool does so beautifully is help me cancel the goal and take the focus off of the distractions and open an energetic pathway so that I might see what is that part of my mind. Where in my world, in my life, did I have an energetic connection created between my goal for someone to listen to me or to respect me or to follow my orders or to think I'm smart enough or to obey me? Where did those goals get connected in my mind to pain and fear or sadness? Or getting connected in my mind to negative beliefs about myself, that I'm not lovable, that people don't care about me or respect me or think I'm smart enough. That's the path to freedom. That's the path to liberty. That's the path to breaking the cycle of sustained incoherence. And once I've done that, and I've let my process of focusing on love, conscious, active, present love, and bringing that to bear as I see the roots of my negative beliefs about myself, and I start to dismantle those negative beliefs about myself, that's when the pain, the fear, the sadness loses its hold on me and begins to soften. Now I've removed this negative pattern from the cycle of my thought process and my emotions and my belief system, and I've left an empty space. Then we say, okay, we know something about how the nature abhors an empty space. Let's put something positive in there. Let's continue the healing process rather than just think a loving thought and move on. And that's where in number 7, step 7 of the worksheet process, we look for a loving goal, a truly loving goal. It is not that loving goal that initiates the healing. It's seeing the false belief about myself. It's becoming aware of, consciously or unconsciously, of the connection between that false belief and the goal I was holding for someone else or something else or even myself in relation to the outside world. So, we have 7 minutes left. Maybe 6 is more accurate because we end up closing off at about a minute and a half. We have a call-in number, 563-999-3581. We have read from the Richard Rohr email. We've read from the Course in Miracles lesson, and we've read from Diedrich Wolzak's email. So what are your comments or questions? How do we close out this show? How do we line up something for our topics for next week? Today's a Friday, so we'll have another week next week, 5 more days of 2 hours a day, but let us know how we can support you. What's a topic? What's a comment? What's a question that we can either begin to address now or line up for use for our show topic next week? Last night was Thursday. We had our support group. And that group has now been running for 7 full years. I guess it's going to be 8 years by the end of the summer. And as by way of, a teaching point, sometimes we have people who start groups and they say, well, I'm quitting the group because we don't have enough people. Well, last night was yet another example. And this has happened on both Tuesdays and Thursday nights over the years from time to time where there was just one other person and myself. And so we held the group anyway. And we watched an hour, probably about an hour and a half of a talk from Guy Finley and his Q&A with his listeners that were online and there in person. He's gotten to the point where they've slowly reopened his Life of Learning Center, so they actually had some people live in attendance. So next week we'll have another support group on Tuesday and Thursday. Information about that's available at mindshiftersacademy.org. Separate page for each day. Different login information for each day. So feel free to join us or refer somebody you know that might benefit. It's absolutely free. It's from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And we'd be grateful if you'd pass that information along or join us yourself. And we have about 4 minutes left. How can we support you? What's on your mind? What comments or questions might you have about anything we've talked about in the past 10-plus years? We have a Father's Day coming up this weekend. I suppose we should mention, please either use the tools yourself or be ready to support other people in using the tools, because every time there's a holiday like this, there is the potential for lots of good feelings, and there's also potential for lots of not-so-good feelings, connections people have had to loss or connections people have had to unpleasant experiences with their parent. I remember one time at a religious science church, a practitioner got up. The usual minister wasn't there, and it happened to be a Sunday morning on Father's Day. And she got up to give her talk, her little sermon, and she began it with how her father was a rat bastard sperm donor. And it took me a while to recover from that. I spent a lot of time through the rest of that week and a couple weeks after supporting other members of that community, processing some of their pain and upset. That got resonated because this leader got up and spewed all of her pain and anger. So please remember, we have powerful tools that can help people dismantle the negative emotions that might come up around a holiday like this if you've lost your father or your father was less than loving to you. And we've also got ongoing support 5 days a week. And the call-in number is 563-999-3581. And you can also email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at yagain.org, or you can email me at tjh at mindshifters-academy.org. And I wonder if you're there, Jeannie. I see that you've turned on your microphone. Is your phone unmuted?
I am here. Thank you.
Welcome. I'll just remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. And I hope you have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. So today is Friday. It's been a fast week. Friday, June the 18th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And the Android is still not updated. I worked with India this morning on it, and it has to do with Google and the Android version, the software version now, not the phone, where version Android 11 has something in it that it doesn't want to do something unless you do all access. And we're not giving all access. So we're doing a little modification on that one. It's the big part is in the Dragon Klingon game, and where it saves your score. And so what's going to happen on that until Google gets their stuff worked out is that they can still play the game and it'll show them their score at the end, but it will not save it until the next time that we can make a release when Google's got their issue worked out. But they can look at their score and then they can start over, but it'll lose the score on the Dragon Klingon game. It works on the iPhone. So anyway, we're working all that out and continue throughout today and this weekend, so hopefully we'll have it going by Monday. But we welcome you to the show. Welcome, Michael.
Technology. So nice when it works, isn't it?
I know.
Thank you for sticking to it. That's how many hours you put into that conversations and back and forth. And welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here with us today. We're moving forward with the sharing of the principles of first century Aramaic forgiveness on a global scale, looking to create a record that becomes available. And we certainly appreciate this technology that we have with Blog Talk Radio. We understand that there have been some challenges and difficulties in getting into the show, and our apology for that. Unfortunately, sometimes there are technological problems with Blog Talk that are kind of out of our control. Unfortunately, they don't respond very well to challenges like that. So our apology if that's occurred with you. And in the meantime, we're delighted that you're back here to be part of this conversation. And Ms. Jeannie, do we have a hand up from Mithy, who was going to call at the beginning of the show? She wasn't sure she was going to be able to, but I told her that we'd open a space with her if she was available.
Yes, she is on. So 517.
Awesome.
Miss Mitzi, welcome.
Hi, thanks, folks.
Well, hey there, young lady.
I had a conversation with you this morning, Michael. Perhaps you could set the context a little bit for the listeners before we jump into the emotional release technique you shared with me?
Absolutely. So we had a conversation about an issue that Mitzi was having, and she asked for some feedback on a responsibility communication. And in our talking about it, it turned out there were perhaps some emotional ties with this person that end up interfering. Jeannie, you've got something to share with me?
Pull it just a little away from your mouth because I hear you breathing.
Okay. See if that gets better. We're working on microphones here. So I suggested to Mitzi that she might want to do release technique, which is a really simple, simple process. In fact, most people would look at it and say, what could that ever do? But I'll just share that over the years, I've seen some profound changes happen in relationships when this simple process is engaged in. And so just offered to do it, and Mitzi came back with, well, let's do it on the radio show, then everybody gets to share on it. So glad you made that suggestion, Mitzi, and glad you're here to do it. Thank you for the privilege
All
of
right.
serving.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So for everybody in our audience that's listening, the way the process works, it's a matter of just centering your awareness in a certain part of the brain, and we'll direct you to that part of the brain. And if you've got anybody that in your life where you have a lot of emotional reactions to them, then this is a tool that can just cut those emotional reactions and leave you in a place where instead of having to react emotionally to things, you can act consciously, purposely, and enter, you know, fully conscious dialogue. And, you know, that tends to simply move relationships forward. And we're going to bring in the concept of Ruka Dikudsha from the Aramaic. And in the Aramaic language, those words, Ruka Dikudsha, speak of a feminine elemental force inside of us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. And so let's say one of our errors might be to become emotionally attached in reactions with folks. And so this is exactly where, from the Aramaic, Ruka fits into healing our lives. And so we're going to call on, there will be a release statement, and we're going to call on that power just so everybody knows what we're speaking of. We're going to short form it to Ruka, and so that will be the release statement. And before we go to that, we want you to think about somebody in your life where perhaps you've got some emotional attachments, and just bring them to awareness. And then imagine that I have two pencils of light in my hands, and I'm in the room with you, and I place one of these pencils of light directly in through the center of your forehead, what people might call the third eye. So I'm going to imagine I'm placing one of those pencils in as you breathe and get centered. And then I'm going to place the second pencil of light through the top, very center of the top of your skull, what people might call the crown. And the reason for doing that is because that centering there seems to be an effective place from which to do this emotional release. It's like where the emotional strings can be cut. And so what I'm going to ask you to do is just imagine that I've placed those two pencils of light there and allow yourself to center in the place where those two pencil tips would meet. And Mitzi, I'll just ask you to do that. And when you're there, let me know. I'll give it a few seconds for others to get centered, and then we'll go into the release statement.
I'm there.
So let me know. Okay. And then allow a picture of the person involved to come to mind. So you're centered in that place where the two pencil tips would meet. Give you a moment to really get centered there.
I've got the picture.
Okay. So, everybody, you're centered there. You've got the picture. We'll give you another few seconds to do that. And then addressing Rukka. Rukka, you're asking for help. I release all attachment to and speak that person's name.
Rukka, I release all attachment. Rukka, I release all attachments to Aspen.
And breathe. As I said, it's a pretty simple process. Do you notice anything happening in your hands or your feet or your face?
I noticed my third eye is active. It's tingling, but I noticed that as soon as I put the pencil of light there, I don't notice anything beyond that at this point.
Okay, cool.
Well, a tendency perhaps to breathe more shallow.
Okay. Well, I'd invite you to consciously, purposely breathe a little deeper because that will enhance any release that's happening. And usually what people will experience when that energy starts to move is they'll experience some energy moving in their heads, as you mentioned, in your third eye area. It can be different places in the head, and or it tends to move in the hands and or the feet. There'll oftentimes be a tingling sensation or just, you know, a sensation of energy moving.
Right.
And if it comes to mind to, you know, center yourself and do the exercise again, you might do that, but that's how simple it is. It seems,
right,
you know, overly simple, but I've just watched it make some major changes in people's lives, especially where there were conflicts happening.
Yep. Sometimes the simple things are the best, right? Like,
yes,
breathing.
Yeah, exactly. Did you notice anything happen with the picture that you were holding in your mind?
I became aware of some potential content for forgiveness that I've already done some forgiveness around with this particular topic and this this friend and the issue that we're having. I have done some goal canceling and some forgiveness, but I became aware of something else that I'm still perhaps holding on to. So I guess that would be more of a mental exercise or a physiological exercise, and that this perhaps is more of an emotional, perhaps freed me up emotionally to see that other piece, the piece that's underneath it.
Sweet. Well, is there anything we can support you with? Or is it just something you're ready to go sit down and do a worksheet with?
I'm going to do a worksheet.
I've got to
go.
All
right. I appreciate that. I've done that technique before. I just didn't recall. It just isn't in the forefront of my toolbox, but I do remember doing it with my son Journey several times with your guidance or recommendation. And, yes, it did. It did help then too, so I appreciate it. Yeah.
Oh, good breath. We'll be holding the space for you, young lady.
I appreciate you. And all the listeners, thank you for the moment.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a blessed day.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, do we have any other hands up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's off. There's a lot of people on the switchboard, but nobody else has their hand up. So if someone presses one, you're first in line. Or you can go to reading in the book.
Yeah, we haven't done any reading in a couple of days. Things have been pretty pretty interesting, the process happening. So let's go back to the chapter on choosing teachers in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We are, for those who maybe are new to the show, we've been opening shows most days, though not every day, with a reading from the book, with the vision of working through the book over the period of the year 2021. And so we're in a section called Choosing Teachers. If anybody's reading along with us, we're on page 80, down toward the bottom. And if you don't have a copy of the book and you'd like to get one, unfortunately, it's out of print, and we don't have any left. But you can go to Amazon or to eBay and usually find a couple dozen copies on each of those sites that are available fairly inexpensively. So you can do that. And or you're welcome to go to our website, whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And there's a picture of the book cover on the homepage. And if you click that book cover, it'll take you to a place where you can download it in English or Thai or German or Spanish or Dutch or a couple of other languages in any event. English, of course. So it's there, and you're certainly welcome to download it. You can read it on your tablet or your Kindle reader. I'm not sure whether it'll read on Kindle or not. But anyway, there are lots of ways to read it on your computer. And, of course, you can print it out as well. So we're talking to Richard about the idea of the quality of teachers that we engage in. And I've just asked him the question about, let's imagine you're studying chemistry and you needed an advanced lecture on a topic in the field of chemistry. And I've basically asked him the question, would you go to a first-year student and ask them to do that for you? And he says, of course not. So that would be silly. And when we come into this first-century Aramaic understanding, this first-century Aramaic teaching of Yeshua, and we have people who are novices at reading, translating, or understanding the Aramaic language, it's kind of like asking the first-year chemistry student to give us an advanced lecture in chemistry. It just doesn't make any sense. And the conceptual framework of the Aramaic language is so different than the Greek perceptual construct. Recognizing that perception is a construct of the mind, the construct that each mind has in any given situation is reflective of the content and the experiences in that mind. And when one is overridden with, let's say, for instance, we go to Yeshua, just as an example, his name was not Jesus, his name was Yeshua, the man they call Jesus. And when we look into his language and his conversations, there's an idiomatic language that, if you don't know the meaning of the idioms that he's using, will not make much sense for those who don't have the brain cells. You go back and you listen to him, he says that his teaching is for those who have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. And specifically, there are many references of, those who having eyes do not see, those who having ears do not hear. They're obviously not talking about what we call the act of seeing and hearing, But in that case, what they're saying is, it's only if you have the brain cells for what I'm speaking that you're going to hear me accurately. For instance, if you were brought up totally and completely isolated from the Aramaic and brought up in the Greek world, be rather, let's say, what would my word be? In a state of some kind of disturbance, if somebody told you that you had sinned, you know, that Greek language has all kinds of connotations, all kinds of really bizarre meanings attached to it. So people who have the Greek brain cells for sin, when they'd hear that word, might find themselves somewhat disturbed. In the Aramaic language, the word sin is an archery term. When you fire at the bullseye and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper yells, sin, you're off the mark. So if in the Aramaic context I said, well, you have sinned and you were Greek, if you heard me saying those words in English and your background was coming through Greek translations, you might think yourself, well, let's say it gently, something that you're not, and take on an identity that's a total fraud. I remember one time Jeannie and I were invited to go to a large church in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, televangelist type thing, not the place we'd normally go, but we were invited, so we went. And you know, there were a couple thousand people in the room. And we happened to be there on a day where they invited, or they were having an induction of young people into the church to become members. And for me, knowing that the word sin is an archery term that simply means off the mark, you know, my Aramaic brain cells say that has absolutely nothing to do with your identity, you know. And so here's the preacher. He brings his young people up, pretty impressionable young people up to the front. He says, okay, now you're going to become members of the church. And the first thing that we're going to ask you to do is to admit or proclaim yourself a sinner. Now, to translate an archery term that means off the mark into an identity of self and claiming that you are that is just a totally, completely bizarre and outrageously destructive behavior, destructive thing to tell somebody to do. You know, we've talked the last couple of days about the word diagnosis. Very similar. Somebody says, well, I'm a, and put any diagnosis you want behind it, and you proclaim yourself that. Now, there may be energetic patterns that reflect what people call the ABC disease or the XYZ disease, but, you know, when you realize that you're a creator, and probably the greatest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages and that we've bought into is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And it is with our words that we literally organize this energy system called life. And we bought into that lie or that hiding the faculty of creatorship from ourselves. And then people go around and follow the words I am with their diagnosis. And the destructiveness of that is just incalculable. Watching those kids get up and proclaim, and they were forced to say the words. Pardon me, I guess I shouldn't say forced. That's my perceptual construct. They were asked to, but it sure looked like a lot of pressure. And once you proclaim something, you know, I have the ABC disease, knowing that we live in an energy system, we've just reinforced the energy. Maybe, you know, maybe there's some markers of that dis-ease energy within you, but there's no entity called disease until we solidify it, lock it in. And one of the ways to lock it in and create it for ourselves is with our words. So that's kind of the conversation we've been having with Richard at this point. And so his answer to the question about the first-year student in chemistry is, of course not. I would want a competent, experienced instructor who knows. I would at least want the input of someone who had actually performed the experiment and had it work, came his emphatic reply. Would it be wise to demand the same from a person you choose to assist you in your spiritual process? Would it be equally wise to qualify the person who helps you reach a conclusion about such a thing as a spirit, whether the spiritual dimension even exists? Many have never thought of consciously choosing their spiritual leaders or considering what appropriate criteria are for making the choice. There are voices in the world that scream, there is no spiritual life, and all religion is a hoax. It amazes me how many people unthinkingly follow the advice of those voices. If you ever asked yourself what qualifies them to give you advice, I find the fact that people listen to these voices especially shocking. I consider that the majority of those advisors are screaming out of their own pain, which tends to render them unconscious. Many tend to listen to those voices, and in succeeding years, when the words of the unqualified echo in their heads, they mistake those thoughts as their own. And so our invitation is to, you know, if you want to accomplish something that you hold as a goal, and you realize that you need instruction on that, it would obviously be wise to have someone who's successfully had the experience to instruct you on how to do that. And so we've got some criteria that we'll be covering later in the book for making that determination, but that'll get us a good start on the ideas of this chapter for today. And if you're out there in listener land and you have any thoughts or questions about those ideas or anything to do with any of the work, you know, our core work is that of forgiveness. And forgiveness, you know, it's another case of who are you listening to? Whose brain cell content are you going with? The Greeks will tell you, well, you know, if you're in pain, somebody did something really terrible to you and caused your pain, but, you know, you should really be big about it and forgive them. And if that instruction makes sense to you, then I lament for the way your life is going to go, because that's an absolutely ludicrous thought from the Aramaic perspective. I'll offer, never, ever, ever forgive anyone, including yourself, for anything, because you can't. If you don't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear what the man Yeshua was saying when he said forgive, then that Greek substitute, and it's a challenging concept for people to get past. I mean, over the years, I've watched people be engaged in this work for literally for 20 years, and they're still talking about forgiving somebody for what they did. Now, if you're going to carry out the Greek act of letting somebody off the hook because they did something out of alignment with integrity to you, then that's a perfectly appropriate thing to do, but that's got nothing whatsoever to do with forgiveness. That's the act of pardoning. I let you off the hook for what you did to me. And by the way, when you did that, it brought a lot of pain up for me. I realized that I've got pain around having watched you do that behavior. And while my mind used to tell me that you were the cause of my pain because you did that and that caused my pain, I've built the brain cells from the Aramaic to recognize that if there's pain in me, I'm the one who's responsible, and that all that pain means is that there's an energy inside of me that doesn't belong inside of me. And if you give me the gift, you know, this turns around when you build the brain cells into, if you give me the gift of showing me the pain that I've hidden from myself, then instead of thinking about forgiving you, I mean, if you did something really bizarre, I mean, I might still choose to pardon you. But then, if I understand correctly what the word means, I'm going to own, when that was done, it brought up pain for me, and now I'm going to apply forgiveness to my pain to remove my pain so that I don't have to live in the world of why is this happening to me again? It's the title of our book. Why is this happening to me again? I'm a creator. I hold this mind energy that doesn't belong in me warns me of its presence by giving me the signal that there's pain there. If I see that signal, I recognize that my energy system is telling me that there's something going on in me. There's an energy inside of me that doesn't belong in me. And what I want to do in that case, as opposed to let you off the hook for the fact that it's there or to blame you for the fact that it's there, is I want to apply the tool of forgiveness to remove that energy which is causing my pain. And, you know, pain is a natural part of life. Now, you'll notice I said natural, not necessary. It's become the norm in our culture because we've bought into all kinds of lies about ourselves. And so if we live in the confusion of blame, of drama and trauma, of generational hostility and fear, it will be a natural thing to have the feedback mechanism of pain telling us that there's something going on inside of us that doesn't belong there. And every time that pain occurs, it's an invitation to go inside and clean up whatever's there. And it doesn't matter what kind of pain it is. It can be physical. It can be mental or emotional. You know, it can be rage or guilt or fear or hatred or vengeance. Emotional type things. It can be mental. You know, we've been talking the last couple of days about what the world calls mental disorders. And they're not disorders. They are perfectly ordered. They are perfect feedback mechanisms to tell us and invite us into doing a piece of work. There's some work to do here. Energies like anxiety and fear and depression are simply the natural way that your energy system gives you wonderful feedback. But if you've been told all your life that when your energy system is giving you that feedback, there's something wrong with you, and you buy that, you just drop into the next level of thought disorder that the culture has fed to you. We're here to put out a hand and raise you up out of those thought disorders. If you have depression, there's nothing wrong with you. There are simply thought disorders going on in your mind, and what you need are tools with which to reach into yourself and remove those things. You're not broken. You don't need fixed, but you've got work to do. You know, if I've got a house and I let it go over a period of years, it might come to the point where, well, I need some repairs on the floor. You know, somebody walked across the floor and their foot went through. That's a warning signal that I need to do some repair in the house. So all of those energetic patterns we've been talking about the last couple of days are simply warning signals that say, and an invitation. Come on in and do some work. Get conscious here. And if you don't have the tools, then acquire the tools. If you don't have the skills, Now, if you've been introduced to or perhaps haven't been introduced to the Aramaic forgiveness process yet, we invite you to go to our website. The website is www.whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner of the website, you'll see a link that says Start Here. Click that link, and that will walk you through everything you need to know. Or at least, let me say it differently. Everything that Jeannie and I could think, and a lot of our friends have supported us by, oh, why don't you put this on the website and that on the website. Everything that we could come up with that could support you in integrating actual forgiveness into your life. Forgiveness meaning removal of sin, removal of energies that are off the mark. And so there's a technology to it. There's a how-to, you know. And, you know, when you look at how deeply traumatized so much of our world is, you know, how many marriages end in divorce? How many young people are committing suicide? The kinds of traumas going on around us. Then you realize that there's a lot of that energy that is off the mark in each person experiencing that. And, you know, to a large degree, the culture set up a business that supports those things continuing for money. If you go to whyagain.org, upper left-hand corner, click Start Here, and it's free. You don't need a penny. And you don't need a penny for us to support you. You know, click that link. Start following all the links that will open. There are radio shows where either Dr. Tim or Jeannie or myself have walked somebody through a worksheet. There are worksheets, several different versions of the forgiveness process. There are several complimentary worksheets that will walk you through developing the skills of moving out of every and any form of hostility or fear and restoring yourself to the awareness of yourself as the presence of love. If you want to invest in doing that, then there are DVDs, there are CDs, there are streaming, there's a streaming service for all of our DVDs now, so they're available. You can go to App Store in your phone, as Jeannie was talking about earlier, and it's still taking, you know, we're still going through some challenges with the Android. Apparently the latest Android update 11 has some problems that Google hasn't worked out yet, so we're adapting to that, and hopefully by Monday, as Jeannie said, that will be on the website. Or pardon me, on the in the App Store. But just go into your App Store, whatever kind of phone you have, and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's first forgiveness app, actually the world's only forgiveness app. Thank you, Jeannie, for your creation, and it is awesome. So you can do the forgiveness process right there. We've also, there's a kids game called the Dragon Klingon game for introducing kids to the forgiveness process. And the newest section that's been put in, and it's already uploaded into the iPhone App Store, so you can go to your iPhone App Store and just type in those words, and you'll be looking at that the latest complete version of the app. And, of course, on the Android, we're still working through that. The original version is still there, still very effective and very functional. And the new version hopefully will be up within the next couple of days. And so there are lots of ways to access the tools. And then as you start to access them, I can only imagine there are going to be questions. And we're here to provide support and answers for those questions. So 5 days a week, an hour a day. And, you know, if you're listening, you are welcome to call in any day, every day that you have questions about this work, and we're here to support you and to do our best in answering those questions. Anytime you have a need for support through an issue, we're here to support you in doing that. That's the whole purpose of this radio show. And if you happen to be on one of those stations where we can't see you, our calling number is 563-999-3581. If you dial that number, you'll be listening to the show between noon and 2 o'clock, Monday through Friday, Eastern Time. First hour, Dr. Tim does. Second hour, Jeannie and I do. And we're here to answer questions and support you. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet.
It's all quiet today. Well, gee, I would think that all these topics coming up would open a space. By the way, if anybody wants to join us on Sunday, am I correct, Jeannie, if you know offhand, the time is 11 o'clock on Sunday for the service? At
Hold on,
in Columbus.
And we'll open it up. Hold on just one second.
Well, Jeannie's looking at that. If you want to join us on Sunday morning, I believe it's at 11 Eastern Time, you can go to the Facebook page of Unity of Columbus in Columbus, Ohio. We're going to be doing their Father's Day Sunday service. And if you want to join us for that, that would be awesome. We're going to be looking at forgiveness in the context of relationships with dads. And just kind of...
It is at 11 o'clock Eastern Time.
At 11 o'clock. Okay. So Unity of Columbus, Ohio, if you want to join us on Sunday, that would be awesome. And beyond that, how can we support you? What's on your mind? If you're out there in listener land, you know, if I were in your hometown and, you know, let's say Jeannie and I were traveling, which we're not doing anymore, by the way, which is kind of nice after 40 years of being on the road. But if we were and we just finished having a conversation about what we've been talking about this, you know, 40 minutes or so, 35 minutes, and we walked down off the platform, completed our presentation, you were sitting in the audience, maybe it's at your local church or your local university or library or community center, whatever, jail perhaps, We've spent a lot of time in jail over the years, a lot of different jails around the country and prisons. But if we were there and we walked off the platform, what would you be coming over to ask us? What would be on your mind? And the reason for this show is to present some of the basic ideas from this work and then open the space for conversation, open the space for questions. What's on your mind? Is there anything about what I've said that needs clarification or that doesn't make sense or that you don't agree with? If you push one, we'll be having a conversation, and we'd love to hear from you. Call a number again. If you're on one of those stations where we cannot see you, it's 563-999-3581. Looks like we've got about 21 or 22 minutes left, so there's plenty of room for conversation. Let's say hello. Hello out there. Push one. What's on your mind? And, you know, if it's like, well, gee, my voice is shaky. I don't know if I want to be on the radio. Well, can you make it okay for your voice to be shaky and ask your question anyway? Or, gee, I'm new to this, so I don't even know what question to ask. I'm nervous. Well, can you make being nervous okay? And, you know, oftentimes someone who's totally new to this work brings up one of the most basic questions, and it opens a space for even the most advanced students to really go back and look at their roots and the structure they're working on, you know, the mental structure, and oftentimes fill in the blanks. So if you're totally and completely new, we'd love to hear your voice. And we have no hands up, Jeannie. Everything is quiet on the home front?
It is totally quiet.
Hmm. Well, that's kind of strange. I thought, I'm going to throw out one more set of thoughts that seemed to mind as I was reading that passage from the book. And if it doesn't stir up conversation, we'll assume that everybody's quite happy with what they've got right now, and we'll let the show close. But another thought that came to mind is an example of how the Greek mistranslations have been applied to the Aramaic teachings of Yeshua. Is if you go back, you'll find that, and I don't remember exactly, it was a couple of years ago that I went back and counted, it's 15 or 16 times, Yeshua says to his audience, "Fear not." And then you oftentimes will stand in church today and you'll hear a preacher saying that fear of the Creator is the beginning of wisdom. And we see just, you know, a total turning around of his words and the meaning of his words. And what he was, another popular thing in this culture, in the 32, or many of the 32,000 different sects of Christianity, which is what there are, you'll hear the words that say, well, there's nothing you can do. And yet, if you go back to listen to the man in Aramaic, he gives many, many, many instructions as to what you can do. In fact, there's one passage there where, you know, they ask him, you know, what do we need to do to please the Creator? And Yeshua's response is, he gives them an idiom, but he gives them a response. He tells them what to do. And literally half of his audience, half of his disciples at that point, got up and left. And their words were, too hard a saying. In other words, I don't want to have to dig in and do my work. And I suspect that that's the crew that made up the theology that says, well, there's nothing you can do. You're just a helpless, hopeless. And I won't even repeat the word that goes with it that I mentioned earlier. And you're a helpless, hopeless, you're off the mark with your arrow person. I mean, it just becomes so silly and ludicrous. And so many dive into that as though it's gospel. And it's anything but. And so, you know, there are several books out there that you might want to get a hold of and check out. There's a man named Rocco Errico who's rewriting some of the texts of George Lamsa. George was a native Aramaic speaker. And, of course, he challenges the Greek translations all over the place. You'll hear Greek experts just want to tear him down. But his native language was Aramaic, and he speaks in context of the Aramaic language. And I've read lots of stories of the Greek scholars who have very skillful ways of trying to degrade him and back their audience from someone who's telling them what the words actually meant originally. So there's a book called Gospel Light, More Light on the Gospel, Old Testament Light, Idioms of the Bible Explained. They were originally written by George Lamsa, and Rocco Errico is a protege of Lamsa's, and he's been, with Lamsa's permission, rewriting those to update them and uncover new information from the original Aramaic first century meanings of Yeshua's words. So you might look up those texts by George Lamsa and or Rocco Errico. We have a book in our catalog called Enlightenment, which is what we've translated and published so far from the text that we're working with, which is a 10th century copy of a 1st century 164 AD text. And so that's in our catalog if you want to order that. It's a three-part book which starts out with a story about the Kaboris manuscript. It's called the Kaboris because it was found in the Kibor River in Turkey. So it starts out with a story about how that was found and how the project came about. There's some select passages from the New Testament, and in those passages, the key words are left in brackets in the Aramaic. And then in the back of the book, there's a first century dictionary. And 25 of the world's top Aramaicists worked very diligently to establish the first century meanings of those words so that in context they could be understood. So you can take the Aramaic words left in brackets, go back into the dictionary, and take a look at what did those words actually mean. And some of it is just mind-boggling. And one of my favorites comes out of the Beatitudes, and the Greeks will say we wrote it down first, which is a ludicrous idea. You know, if you know of any Semitic peoples, can you imagine, you know, they have a written system of language. Can you imagine them going to the Greeks and saying, by the way, Greeks, would you write this down for us? Because we don't do it. I mean, it's just silly. But this one particular simple little line verifies that the primary source for these words is the Aramaic, not the Greek. And so if you look at the Beatitudes from Matthew 5, the first Beatitude they tell us is, blessed are they who are poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, remember that Yeshua has spoken about a spiritual being called Ruach HaKodesh that he's here to connect us with. And he said, you know, you can even deny me, but don't deny this. And right there, that has been denied. And so what does that passage say in the Aramaic? The first word in the Beatitudes, each of them, is tuvehun. It's a three-part word in Aramaic. It does not mean anything that relates to blessed are they. What it says in Aramaic is that a latent or an unconscious neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being will become your conscious possession, you who, and then each of the Beatitudes, is a set of instructions. It's not a story about a nice philosophy. It's a set of instructions. And what is the instruction? Now, in the Aramaic language, the smallest letters are called a jot and a tittle. And those smallest letters would be represented by, you know, be about the same as a fly speck on a piece of paper. So the word in Aramaic was those whose home, not those who are poor, but those whose home. And if you take the word poor and the fly lands on it and gets fly speck on the page, then the word home is changed to poor. So now they're telling us we should be poor in spirit. And in Aramaic, that word spirit would be the eternal forces from the Creator. So you're told, instead of living in your head, instead of living in hostility or fear, instead of living in your diagnosis, the objective is have the home you live in, the source of your thinking, is those eternal forces from the Creator. And the eternal forces are based in love. And then what it says is, for theirs will be a heavenly estate. In other words, you're going to live, you know, if you look at the mistranslation of the words, the kingdom of heaven, in Aramaic it doesn't speak about the kingdom of heaven. It says the community of love. So in essence, what that beatitude says, if your home is, if you're living from, if you're thinking from, if you're feeling from, that which the Creator put in you in the beginning, that latent neural structure, which for most people, because of the pain they hold, is unconscious. If you do your work, you contact what's underneath the surface, you bring that forward. And when you do, when your home is there, then you live literally connected to love 24/7, 365. Now go look at every passage based in love, and then you'll see exactly how important that concept is. It's like number one. But the Greeks are going to say you had to be poor in spirit. And so there are just literally thousands of ideas in the Aramaic that have been just totally bowled over by Greek mistranslations. Let's say hello to our caller, sweetie.
It is area code 517. This is Rex or Misty?
It's Rex, actually, and it's wonderful to hear your voice. And I met the chiropractor, so he's just working with a patient, and he's going to be calling me in to see him right now. So I've been hoping that
– cool.
I know you weren't talking – I just wanted to say, Michael, that I get the opportunity for the audience as well to work with your material every single day. I teach it, I live it, I breathe it, and every single day I get deeper and deeper insights as to the brilliance of the body of work that you have created. And just genuine, authentic appreciation for
breathing
you and
Jeannie
and everything you do. So really appreciate it, and it's a blessing to be a part of this work and to be bringing it forward to the world. And that's really what I wanted to say, and I got to go. I love you, and I appreciate you immeasurably.
Have an awesome
Go ahead.
Is this a chiropractor that we know?
Okay. Dr. Dan.
Chiropractor
I think you went to see Dr. Dan one time when you were here.
Yeah, tell him we said
he's
hello
amazing.
And send our love.
He's doing some more work with the patient. I'll sit here. I thought he was going to call me in because they were standing up again. I'm standing outside.
You
think after, over 40 years that I'd have a pretty good handle on all the material, quote, you know what I mean? But the fact is it's living, breathing, growing, and changing. And it represents, for me, the changes that are happening within me open up, and I've even heard you use the words, the brain cells, but my language, it opens up the understanding that I'm capable of having by letting go of my preconceived ideas about the way I thought it was. And that's just an ongoing daily thing, and I embrace each new opportunity. And I welcome the healing. And I've even gotten to a point, Michael, and this is where we all have an opportunity to get to, is when an opportunity comes up for healing, to embrace it rather than fight against it. And it has been a common activity for me to kind of resist, oh, no, there's more pain here, and, oh, no, that isn't fun, or, oh, no, this doesn't feel good. And really, Mark and I, our team, and our group are all about saying, hey, pardon the background noise, the Harley just pulled up beside me. Just really embracing the opportunity for healing, no matter what it is. And it's an ongoing process, but when I present myself to it from a place of embracing love, it's so much easier, and I get the insights a lot faster. So
I'm with you. I hear you. It's certainly a growing, ongoing process, isn't it?
It's amazing. Yeah. And again, thank you for everything. And he's calling me in now. So I love you all, and blessings, and I look forward to talking with you.
All right. Well, tell him we said hello, and have a wonderful adjustment.
Awesome. Thank you.
Blessings. Bye-bye. Well, Miss Jeannie.
We have 6 minutes and we do not have another hand up. So we've got time. We could do one more topic really fast.
We could, yeah. So if you're out there in listener land and anything we've said has stimulated any questions or any curiosity, please, quick one. Let's talk. And if nobody has a thought or a question for us, I'm complete. So maybe we just let loose, close out the show, and say to everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.